Okay, thanks everyone for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Brandon Ferris, my colleague here. He's going to be speaking with us this hour. I am super excited we actually get to be in person together. I had to set it all up. It was a whole thing for me. So this is a big day for me. So Brandon is Vice President of Energy and Resources Policy at the National Association of Manufacturers. So this interview is an element of IRI's sustainability community. And the sustainability community provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote sustainability in your innovation practices. And as a member of the community, you can access facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. So these are on the fourth Thursday of every month. So it'll be taking place tomorrow at noon. Let me know if you want an invitation. We also do case studies and white papers with industry examples. And we have updates with insights and additional resources and interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. So I'll be sure to sign all of you up if you aren't already signed up for the sustainability community. And if you don't want to receive updates, just let me know. So just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Brandon. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can either type them into the chat or you can unmute yourself and come on and ask Brandon a question face to face, as it were. All right, all of the boring stuff is out of the way. So let's get started here. So Brandon, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this.
Going to be great. So just set the stage, tell us about your background and the work that you're doing here at the NAM.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So I joined the NAM about 3 months ago. I'm now VP of Domestic Economic Policy. So we've included transportation infrastructure and labor in our shop as well. But my background is energy, climate, sustainability, and chemicals. I came from a member company. I worked with Chemours, and we're going to talk about PFAS, and I worked for a PFAS manufacturer. So I've done a lot of work with members, and I'm very excited to be on the NAM side, but have a good idea of the challenges members are facing.
Awesome. Love that. So PFAS, you already previewed it for us. That's the biggest issue we're hearing about. Tell us what PFAS are and why we all need to be thinking about these things.
It's funny when you say, what are PFAS? Because that is one of the biggest arguments we have is what the heck is a PFAS? How to define it? So generally, it's a class of chemicals that enable modern day life. You use them to be able to produce semiconductors, cell phones. Just looking around this room, and half of this room doesn't work without PFAS.
Okay.
Lighting for the cables. And so there, it's a class of chemicals, and right now we're trying to get our head around it's somewhere between 200 and 13,000 chemicals. And so it's when you talk about how to regulate them, that's one of the biggest questions is what are they? But generally, we work with a few different definitions. But generally, those class of chemicals that enable modern day life.
Okay. Why do we need to care?
Why do we need to care? Because you, at this point right now, you can't make a semiconductor without it. You can't make batteries without it. And what we're hearing is that it's either the federal or the state regulations, it's EU. There are two big pieces to this. There are regulatory bodies that are either trying to ban or phase them out, or it's going to be such heavy reporting requirements that you're going to spend millions to tens of millions of dollars a year reporting each of your products that may have been made with PFAS. So it's going to be two pieces, two big pieces coming down the pike. One is, can we keep using this chemical? And then two, what is the burden on me for reporting us being able to use it, even if we don't directly add it? It could be two or three or four tiers down from where we sit. And that could be something that we would have to, under some of these reporting regimes, that we would have to.
Okay, so what's coming down the pipe regarding PFAS? What do we need to be aware of?
Biggest thing in the US is the CERCLA, the Superfund bill. And that makes every site that's ever used PFAS a cleanup site. And that's not going after the manufacturers of PFAS. That's going after, did you use a PFAS gasket in your facility? Were you given PFAS from a supplier and used it? Did it end up in your end product or not? for the grocery stores that they use a bucket of mop and glow. And so anyone that has ever used it would become liable under the Superfund law. And that's a big one. Right now, EPA has the first two chemicals. They're the PFOA and PFOS. They're called the legacy chemicals. And that's because about 12 years ago, U.S. manufacturers decided we're not going to make these anymore. You can still find them from other places in the world. But U.S. manufacturers said we're out of these. And so legacy chemicals, Superfund, what we expect to see is sometime this fall, that will be finalized. There's another regulation right now for the next four. What EPA is going to do is start taking them in groups because they can't do all 13,000 at once. So they're going to start taking them in groups and put them under Superfund as well as drinking water regulations. So the Superfund regulation, the drinking water regulation, and then reporting requirements. The reporting requirements are going to be some of the most extensive I've ever seen. Generally, when you report under TSCA, you report chemicals. And if there's de minimis, if there's this much of it in your end product or in your supply chain, you don't have to report. Under TSCA for PFAS, TSCA 8A, they got rid of the de minimis requirement. And one of the authors of the TSCA bill is now at EPA implementing it. And she said for a long time, generally TSCA, you report chemicals. She said, we wrote this to include articles. And so we expect to see sometime this fall the finalized TSCA 8A reporting. And what we expect to see is that it's chemicals, articles, which essentially means everything, and no de minimis. And this is going to be, from my career here, this is going to be the most extensive reporting required from EPA that I've ever seen.
Okay. What does TSCA stand for?
TSCA is the Toxic Substances Control Act. And it's anything that may be toxic to humans, companies are required to report it.
Okay. So how can everybody here who may or may not be using PFAS, probably are, depending on the definition that we've got going on, how can they get their viewpoints heard? How can they get more information?
So the NAM, we run a monthly meeting, a monthly member meeting on PFAS. We started couple months ago, we had 300 members sign up. Generally, a very good meeting is 100 members, and we had 300 members sign up. And every meeting we've had since then, we've had more and more. And so I would say join that and air what you're seeing, because what we're seeing is the reporting requirements. What we're seeing is potential phase outs, bans. I think the first 100 conversations I had at the NAM were a member coming up and saying, we know we have a PFAS problem. Can you help us solve it? And about 100 after that were, we're hearing a lot about PFAS. I don't know if I have a PFAS problem. Can you help us solve it? And to your point about the ubiquitous nature of it, a lot of folks that we've had come to us and say, we don't think we have PFAS in anything. And we say, well, tell us about your supply chain. Tell us about exactly what you do. And 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100, we find somewhere in their supply chain that they're using PFAS. And so that's one of the things. It is used everywhere. And I get asked on a daily basis, is this the next asbestos? Mm-hmm. And it's not. It's worse because you didn't carry around things with asbestos in it. Asbestos was limited to certain categories, whereas everything you carry around now, my Apple Watch band is made with PFAS. And so being able to take an entire class of chemicals out of commerce and not having replacements is tremendously frightening.
So, you know, the IRI membership, we're innovators. You know, we also view these sorts of things as an opportunity, but it sounds like this might be a very challenging opportunity because you really don't know what you're actually trying to innovate at this stage.
Absolutely. So that's one of the pieces that we're working on in the Senate. There's a bill from Senator Carper and Senator Capito, West Virginia and Delaware, two states that have traditionally had PFAS issues. And one of the pieces in there is an X prize for alternatives. And nearly every company that I speak with said, if there were alternatives that had the same properties, so the carbon fluorine bond is nearly unmatched in chemistry, but if there were alternatives, we would use them tomorrow. And so that's one of the pieces for this legislation. One of the pieces that we absolutely support is seek those alternatives, figure out where we can have alternatives and where we might not be able to. So the semiconductor industry is notoriously hard to have anything approved because the level of purity required. You go in there and it's like more pure than a medical facility. And so to be able to get a replacement for semiconductor industry, we're talking about 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. So PFAS is in everything from microwave popcorn bags to semiconductors. When you talk about can within the next couple of years, we have a replacement for a microwave popcorn bag that doesn't have PFAS that possibly leaks a little bit more. Absolutely. Absolutely we can. When you talk about innovating and finding replacements for semiconductors, for batteries, that is going to be much more intensive, but that's going to be something that everyone would immediately adopt. As long as it had similar properties and was PFAS-free, then that's where the innovation comes in, and that's greatly needed.
Okay. I'm sure we're going to come back to PFAS. I'm sure you all have a lot of questions, but we're going to run through some other key issues that you've got going on because poor Brandon has all the things. So what are some other things that we need to be aware of right now? So I think, you know, in our prep call, we talked about the power plants rule. So can you talk us through that and how it's going to impact us?
Absolutely. And bringing it back to the point of innovation. So for the power plants rule, what EPA has said is within 10 years, we're over 60% fossil fuels. 60% of our power generation is either natural gas or coal. And EPA has said within 10 years, widespread deployment of carbon capture or hydrogen. Both of those technologies that NAM are big supporters of, but they're unproven at the scale that you would need them to be able to be. And so that is one of the things that it's an instance of a regulation that can quickly shut down our power generation because you can't produce those at scale. And so that's continued innovation needed because, yes, we have good ways to make hydrogen. We're developing ways to do CCS, but that's constantly innovating and making it cheaper, making it better, and making it easier to transport. And so when you look at this power generation rule, no one wants to shut down 60% of our power generation within 10 years. And what do you replace it with? Because it's we talk about permit reform, and it's very hard to build anything in the U.S., much less transmission, much less distribution. And so that's something that's of great concern. And it's something that we're seeing a lot from EPA on is essentially saying, add these new technologies or shut down. And that's anything for fossil fuels. That's what they're asking for on PFAS is give us alternatives and several other chemicals. Ethylene oxide. Ethylene oxide is used to sterilize just about everything imaginable, particularly medical devices, because it's one of the only things that can sterilize medical devices and not destroy the medical devices. And EPA has a regulation, right? Right now, we're in DC. You go out there, clearly no manufacturing cabin. But EPA's proposed regulation is that the background levels right out there are higher than what's going to be allowed in a chemical facility. And so how does anyone meet those regulations for a chemical that we need? And so that's what we're seeing time and time again from the EPA that's working to finalize a lot of these rules. And a lot of these rules are zero. And manufacturers are innovative and manufacturers have clean air, clean environment, but no manufacturer anywhere can meet zero.
Yeah, and we still all want to buy the stuff. So it's,
absolutely.
You know, as green and crunchy as we want to be, I still want my phone.
Absolutely. 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 And you want it at an affordable price. Mm. And that's something to where every piece of this you add on, you're raising manufacturing costs and you're raising costs to the consumer. So if we develop a PFAS alternative that makes phones $8,000, what have we achieved? Because no one can, I mean, heck, phones are close to $1,000 now and you have to get on a payment program. And so that's one of the things is we will never say don't regulate us. What we always say is regulate us in a smart way that we can achieve, but we can also keep consumer costs down. We keep that when we look at manufacturing in the U.S., it is amongst the cleanest in the world. And we're in favor of continuing to go cleaner. But there's a certain point where there's a trade-off to where if you do this regulation, then we can't manufacture this in the U.S. It still has to be manufactured. It's going to be manufactured in a much less clean environment.
Yeah, it's all about that balance, isn't it? It's very hard to strike, it sounds like.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we're going to roll on through the challenges. So plastics draft strategy, what are the key points? What do we need to know?
Yes, plastics draft strategy. So plastics is one of the big issues facing us globally. And when you look at the plastics in the oceans, when you look at the plastics waste issue, a lot of that is not a U.S.-centric issue because you see manufacturers, and we've got a fairly good recycling system. Can it be improved? Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's part of the NAM's comments is about how we can improve that recycling system. But also you look at this as a global issue because a lot of the plastics that end up in the ocean are in Southeast Asia. And that makes it a global issue. And so as we look at this, one, we have to solve our issues in the U.S., and that's being able to understand. I know every time you go to your recycling bin and you look at your can and you say, can I recycle this or do I have to throw this away? And so that confusion leads more people than not to just throw something away. So we can clear up the confusion. Consumer confusion, I think, accounts for more issues than anything in the US. And then you see your local recycler will like, we'll take type 3, we'll take type 2, but not type 4. And your average consumer, I have this conversation at home all the time where I'm in the industry and so same thing with my wife is she's like, everything she does, she just holds it up and says, recycle or trash. And so when someone in the industry can't adequately explain that to everyone else, it's something that's clear a need for education. And so it's education, but it's also a global issue. There's later this year, there's going to be continued negotiations on a plastics draft treaty. And that's something the NAM is going to continually be involved in because we need to solve this, not just in the U.S., but as a global issue. And we want more recycling. We want to be able to better have a circular economy. But this is going to be a big piece of that.
Okay. I'm just going to start sending you photos of all of my recycling.
Please do.
All right. Last, we have particulate matter. What do we need to know there?
So particulate matter, it comes under the air quality standards. Particulate matter are microscopic particles in the air. And the only time you notice them is think of the wildfires that we've had recently.
Yeah, that's been fun.
And you can essentially, in D.C., we're far away from Canada, but in D.C., you can cut through the air with a knife. Mm-hmm. And so that's when it gathers in a quantities like that, it's going to be an issue. Where EPA is right now, there's a standard for EPA that's existed for nearly a decade, and it's at 12 micrograms per liter. And again, amongst the cleanest in the world. We have some of the toughest standards in the world amongst the cleanest. There's several different proposals EPA is reconsidering, and they can go to 10, 9, 8. They can go all the way down to 8 is what they're considering. And if they went all the way down to 8, again, cleanest in the world already, and if they went all the way down to 8, what we're going to see is 40% of the U.S. population gets into a non-attainment zone. And if you're in non-attainment, it's done on an annual basis. So if you're in non-attainment right now, you're in non-attainment for a year. And why does non-attainment matter? Non-attainment means you can't build bridges, you can't build roads, you can't build manufacturing facilities. It limits the amount of agriculture you can do because particulate matter is if you're turning dirt. So some naturally occurring occurrences, wildfires can create particulate matter, dust storms can create particulate matter. And so if you go all the way down to 8, again, we agree with sensible regulations, but if you go all the way down to 8, you're throwing nearly half the country into an area where you can't build bridges and roads, and you can't build them on a year-end basis. And then let's say they're a year into it, and then there's a wildfire, and then now you can't build them for another year. And so we're tremendously concerned about this regulation and how far they plan on going. If they went to a moderate level that will help clean the air and continue to make us the cleanest in the world, but also be able to create those jobs and build that growth, then that's something that we can be supportive of. But we're very concerned where they're headed right now.
All right. So what do we do about it? Same with PFAS.
So get involved. Get involved. You can work with NAM. We have working groups on any of these pieces. You can contact your congressional officials and let them know that we're in favor of sensible regulations. These regulations are going too far.
Okay. And I'll include Brandon's contact info in our email. All right. So looking to the future, what do you think companies need to think about as they do their long-range planning here? With all that in mind.
So I think that's a good question. So when you look at your long-range planning, so for years, PFAS was the next big thing. We knew it was coming slowly. Start looking for what's the next big thing. Climate and climate disclosures are always going to be an important piece of this. Innovating around sustainability is going to be an important piece. This is something that, regardless of Republicans or Democrats, there's always going to be a drive to be cleaner air. There's going to be a drive to have certain chemicals not included in the value chain. So start looking around and seeing what you can see. And if you can get ahead of the game and you can start providing alternatives to some of these things that may be banned within the next few years, then that's a wonderful benefit to your company as well as to the marketplace. And so start looking at some of these trends, because some of them, same thing with asbestos. We knew asbestos was coming for years and years, but start looking at the trends and see what you can get ahead of and where you can innovate around solutions. And sometimes, like with PFAS, sometimes the reason a certain substance is used is because it's the absolute best for its properties. And so sometimes when you're innovating, there's going to be a replacement that may not be a perfect replacement, but the sooner the market can rally around that and the sooner you can find efficiencies elsewhere, it's going to be helpful to the process. But just take a step back and look at the trends you see, because those trends continue on for years. And to the extent you can to innovate around those, it's very helpful.
So when you say, see what trends you're seeing, so what were the murmurings that you started hearing about PFAS where you're like, oh, okay, time to figure this out?
So generally what you see is when you start seeing companies look at this and say, maybe I don't want to be in this. So companies would deselect PFAS nearly immediately if they were replacements. There's a few things where you can see if you start seeing a lot of news stories about a certain chemical, and that was PFAS, is there was a slow drumbeat about there's issues here, there's issues here. And you can see that for other chemicals. Ethylene oxide is a good example. Methylene chloride is a good example. So a lot of these are chemicals issues. A lot of these are raw materials issues. So it may not be in the finished goods that a lot of these members work with, but they're the building blocks of those. So right now, what I would do is I would check the news and I would look for what chemicals issues, what building blocks issues are going to come down. Because even if you don't use the chemical itself, it's often building into what your end products are.
Yeah, we might tap you to have us track some of those
I'm
because we're at the front end of things here. So
happy to do so.
awesome. All right, so let's go ahead and open the floor to questions here. And if you want to raise your hand and come off of mute, we see we've already got some coming through on the chat. So let's go. So how do we see the European Green Deal influencing future regulations in the US, especially regulations impacting the chemical industry?
So what I will say is, and one of the things that you will notice from the U.S. quite a lot is our pendulum swings. We had 4 years of the Trump administration where the EPA essentially didn't do a whole lot, didn't do a whole lot of regulation. And so what you saw was the states say, okay, the Trump administration, EPA, isn't regulating PFAS, so we're going to regulate. And when the states look for leadership, they look a lot of times to the EU, because the EU moves faster and they move a lot, more purposefully on these chemicals. So one of the things I can see is if we swing back, we have a presidential election next year. If we swing back and go to a Republican administration that's going to regulate the environment less, we're going to see states take the EU Green Deal and run with it. If we see a continuation of the Biden administration, we'll continue seeing them regulate these chemicals. So one way or another, in the US, they're going to be regulated, but it's going to be, are you dealing with a 50-state patchwork or a federal regulation? And I would prefer, and when I was in industry, I preferred having a common sense federal regulation, because you have one to meet. When it's at zero, you don't prefer one federal regulation, but it can basically influence quite a great deal. It influences the states more heavily because they're more flexible and they have much less staff. And it's largely a, hey, someone else is doing this, so we can easily copy it. Whereas the federal, it's a little slower moving and it's not as heavily influenced by the EU, but it depends on the administration.
Okay. So Heather's curious about a few things. So how about microplastics, including with ground and water contamination versus position on the air particulate contamination? Get to the rest of this question. We'll start there.
Yes, microplastics is an absolute growing concern. It's something that I'm surprised that this administration has not tackled yet, but they are working on, as well as this is something that is going to be part of the global discussion, as well as state by state. Right now, it is uncertain exactly where it's headed, other than the fact that it's going to be heavily regulated. And this has been, again, talking about trends. This is something that we in industry talked about 6 or 7 years ago. It went quiet a little bit, but it's something that we've known is coming for nearly a decade. And right now, it's receiving a lot more attention. And generally, when something politically starts receiving a lot more attention, if you talked about it for a few years, then it can go much quicker. But that's absolutely one of the things that I was talking about when you start identifying the trends. And microplastics is absolutely one of the trends.
Okay. All right. So Heather's also curious about the CO2 emissions from agriculture and the primary drivers for the increase of CO2 emissions and the impact on climate change, et cetera. So we talk about CO2 emission control, but wonder what is happening to control this in agriculture.
So there are separate regulations that USDA and EPA are working together on to control agriculture. That's something that is slower going on agriculture than it is on the power plants. And it's traditionally been a more tricky area to try to define and get their hands around. But that's in process right now.
And next question is, what systems do companies need to employ to adequately track PFAS in raw materials and packaging? That's the $1,000 question, $60,000 question.
It's the million-dollar question. So one of the things that we've talked about with Department of Defense, one of the things we've talked about with our auto OEMs probably have the best supply chain tracking system in industry. It's hard to top the billions of dollars that they've spent on that system. And we have a conversation with them nearly on a daily basis that PFAS is so ubiquitous that can often defeat the tier one, two, and three. They know in and out everything that comes to them. When you start looking at four suppliers down, five suppliers down, did someone use a PFAS gasket in it? So I don't have a very good answer other than the fact that this is something we talk about nearly on a monthly basis with our members. Well, we talk about it individually on a daily basis, and I just got off a call talking about this very subject. But it's something that when we get everyone together, we talk about on our monthly meetings because the tracking system, even before you talk about a ban, the tracking system is going to be unwieldy for so many. And then you have the federal EPA's TSCA reporting. You have State of Maine, who's done a complete ban on PFAS, and they have a reporting system they're working on. Minnesota has the same thing. New Mexico just introduced the same thing. So one of the things that we're working to try to harmonize, and this doesn't give you a system that tracks it, but we're trying to harmonize, and we've talked to EPA and asked EPA to talk to each of the states because EPA's reporting is going to require you to report on nearly everything. And so if you have to report on everything for EPA, and then Maine, one of their, because Maine doesn't have the, obviously, the person power that EPA does. And so Maine's going to charge every company $250 per product that they have to report on. And so for companies with multiple products, that's going to be an administrative nightmare and expensive. And so what we're telling Maine and what we're having EPA tell Maine as well is just use the data that we have. Don't require companies to report 50 different structures because EPA is going to capture everything. And so that's something that we're constantly working on right now, which doesn't answer the question about how do we track it, but it does answer the do I have to report to Maine and Minnesota and New Mexico? The hope is not, the hope is we're working to harmonize those. And then as our members continue to develop supply chain tracking, that's something that may become a capability of the NAM. Because we're being asked that on a daily basis, is how do we track this? So that's constantly in process, but we can talk about the reporting overall, and we're trying to harmonize those.
All right, any more questions for Brandon? And again, you can raise your hand and jump into the chat if you don't feel like typing it out. Oh, here we go. Oh, Chuck, go for it.
Hey, Lee, how you doing? Hey, just a question. I'm going to change gears a little bit and talk about carbon emissions. And question I had asked Lee about previously was, you know, I hear about SEC requirements for, you know, carbon emission reporting or footprint reporting or what have you. We're a private company, so we are not directly bound by SEC rules, but I expect that, you know, the people we supply to are bound, will be bound by those rules and will be asking us for information. So what do you see coming down the pipe about how smaller companies will be required to meet some of these requirements that are really intended for larger companies?
So it's a good question, and I will give you a caveat that I am not our SEC person. I work with them because I handle the climate portfolio, but SEC has been working on that for 2.5 years, and they consistently miss their deadlines because they've discovered how tricky this is, particularly because they want to include Scope 3. And Scope 3 is right now the most amorphous. What we get asked on a daily basis is, can you figure out what Scope 3 is and just give us a regular industry tracking for that? I'd love to be able to tell you that we have that right now. We don't, because that's the trickiest thing. And I know everyone's working on Scope 3. But when you, coming from the chemical industry, everyone's Scope 3 is someone else's Scope 1. And all of us were looking on trying to how to get your hands around this, because chemical industry is the building blocks for all of these decarbonization tools. But I do believe that there's going to be, so our SEC person says they're going to finalize it by the end of the year. He's more optimistic than I am that they'll finalize it. I think it continues to slip, but we'll see something by the end of the year. And I will say that it'll be very burdensome for the private companies as well as the public companies. I think the big thing is going to be, it would be much more reasonable if they required Scope 1 and Scope 2. If they throw Scope 3 in there, I think they're working on an administrative nightmare.
I agree. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thanks. So you did send me that question earlier, and I forgot to include it in our, actually, it's here on the list, and I just rolled right over it. So sorry about that, Chuck. Thanks for keeping us on there, keeping us on track. All right. Anyone else want to jump in with a question? All right. I'm going to do a short plug here because while we wait for anyone to type, because Brandon's actually going to be at our Innovator Summit in October in Atlanta, October 2nd through the 4th. And he's going to be basically bringing the same, but will give us updates on the regulations coming through and, you know, what you need to know and what you need to be thinking about. There's going to be a big sustainability component at that conference, and I'll send details through when I send out the recording. Mr. Brandon, for being willing to come down to Atlanta for us.
Happy to do so.
You can meet him in person.
and it looks like we just got something from Amy as well.
Yeah. So you may have mentioned this, but what is the best way to keep track of the various state regulations regarding PFAS? Does NAM provide updates on these regulations?
So one thing that I will say is, I will say traditionally how the NAM has worked, and it's in our name, we're the National Association. So we don't go and advocate at the states. We have 50 different state partners that we work with. PFAS is one of the things, and the same thing with the EU. We don't have a presence in the EU, and traditionally, we haven't been heavy there. PFAS is one of the things where we've seen bubble up everywhere, and the state regulations are a piece of it. The state legislation is a piece of it. EU is a piece of it. And so right now we're trying to figure out how we can do more fulsome advocacy, including the states and including the EU on PFAS. So that is a long way to answer. Right now, we don't have state PFAS tracking. We have a heck of a lot of federal PFAS tracking, but we don't have state PFAS tracking that we offer through the NAM. But I think by the end of the year, we will. And also, if you join any of our monthly meetings, what we have is we have folks from all over the country that join these meetings and say, hey, our state just had this. And so it's something we'll discuss. But right now we don't have a report of state PFAS regulations that we send out. But I think by the end of the year, we'd like to have it.
right. So Tim is asking what key actions we should be taking away from today's session. Great question, Tim.
So I would say engage early and often. And then when you look to innovate in these key areas. Definitely engage with NAM on these. We have, I think we're unquestionably a leader on PFAS and several of these other raw materials issues. So engagement includes, you'll have my contact information, reach out at any time, let us know if you're seeing something. And that's one of the best ways these work is, again, we don't have 1,000 people at the NAM. But we've got reaches into 1,000 different places. And so that's something that we often rely on is, hey, are you hearing this in this state? We may not have someone in that state, but we may have member companies there. And so this is something that we rely heavily on member engagement.
And we'll send through details on those monthly calls, too. It sounds like people want to join those.
Absolutely.
All right. And Heather's asking, I wonder if these efforts for reporting like Scope 3 will be placing additional burden on companies like this, and she likens this to Enron and Sarbanes-Oxley, highly regulated and large efforts, perhaps unrealistic levels and heavy processes put demands on organizations. She's wondering about impact to organizations and regulatory groups.
So one of the great question, one of the reasons that the SEC started down this path is that for some reason, the SEC believes that every company ever that makes a climate commitment is greenwashing. That companies have no desire to meet these, and particularly on Scope 3. So what they ended up trying to do was only use sticks and no carrots and say you must report on this. When I first saw these proposed, what I thought was, well, great, this is going to mean that no public company is ever going to make a Scope 3 commitment. No public company is ever going to make a lot of these commitments. I think it's going to be tremendously damaging to overall decarbonization efforts if you only get the stick, because a lot of these have been what we've seen from industry leadership of, hey, this is what we're hearing from our customers. And so we want to make these. And I don't, you know, if you have a company in a different situation, then I say congratulations. But when you look at any company who's made a 2050 commitment outside of your apples of the world that are already 110% renewable, I don't think anyone knows how they're going to meet a 2050 commitment. But I think companies make this in good faith saying, we're going to try our best to get there. We're relying on technology that doesn't exist yet. And so I think that all of these are good faith. And what the SEC has said is, well, we need to make sure that you meet this 2050 commitment. And so we're going to punish you by you making these broad commitments because we think you're greenwashing. And so I think it's coming from a place of wrongheadedness. And I think it's going to damage the efforts to decarbonize because I think companies look at this and say, well, I'm not going to make commitments if we're going to be judged on a Scope 3 commitment that we hope to get to. And I think it's going to be tremendously damaging.
All right. So Kiki's asking, where's a good place to find a potential list of concerns / to be banned chemicals of a certain category, such as flame retardants or certain types of polymers?
So on PFAS, there is under TSCA 8A, there is a list of 172 chemicals. So that would be the first place to look for that, is because they're just going to run through. Again, when you talk about between 200 to 13,000, most of the PFAS chemicals are theoretical. It's not something that is made in a lab. It's not something you can find in the environment. That's why there's up to 13,000, is because theoretically they could be made. There's a list of 172 that are on EPA's list that are going to continue to go through and heavily regulate. That's one place for PFAS. When you look at everything else, look at TSCA has a new chemicals program. They have an existing chemicals program, and they prioritize, and they take it 10 at a time. And so look at the 10 that are up now, look at the 10 that will be up for the next couple of years, and those are the ones that in the more immediate term are going to be. And then beyond the TSCA 10 and 10, beyond the 172 for PFAS, just look at the news. And when you start seeing, I worked on PFAS for years, and then finally my wife was like, hey, I'm starting to see news stories on this. And I said, all right, it's hit a level enough now. And so when you start seeing news stories repeatedly on chemicals, that's when you know it's coming, even if there's no proposed regulations yet.
think we can help with that. I'll start pinging you to give us some info.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Last call for questions before we wrap up here. Well, Brandon, thank you for sitting in the hot seat.
Absolutely. Happy to. Thank you for having me on.
So we'll be sending out the recording to everyone. But again, see you tomorrow on the roundtable. And thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Very much appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.